It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, guys, to Money for Lunch. This is, what is it? It's Tuesday, the 12th. And after the show, the good folks at Roadhouse Cinema is flying me out to CinemaCon to hobnob with the rich and famous. Looking forward to this. It's my first time being invited to CinemaCon. And in case you're not sure what CinemaCon is, it's first of all, it's held in Vegas, which automatically makes it fun. Second of all, it is the National Association of Theater Owners. This is all the theater owners around the world get together, and they give each other awards. They talk about new technology. They celebrate people in the industry. J.J. Abrams is out there. Simon Pegg is out there. Simon Pegg just gave J.J. Abrams an award. And so anyway, so hopefully catch up with some of these guys, make some new friends, make some memories. It's going to be a blast. Also, let's see, Adam Tajaldine, one of our listeners, brought to our attention this company called Carbon3D.com. Carbon3D.com. Joe, I think it's Desome or Desome. Anyway, they've created the ultimate process for 3D printing. Basically, what a 3D printer can take can get done in, let's say, 3 or 4 hours. These guys can get done in a few minutes. It's night and day. It is blowing up all over the internet, and so this is wild stuff. We're going to have to get these guys on the show, and this is what I appreciate about you guys, our listeners. Thank you so much for your show suggestions, your topics, your guest suggestions. This is the stuff that makes our show better and totally appreciated your support. All right. Speaking of influence, Stacy Miller, our first guest, Stacy Miller, is a senior manager community communications at Cinchon. During her 10 years with the company, she has pioneered influencer marketing, employee advocacy, and social selling programs that both traditional and social media, traditional and social media, internationally sought after keynote speaker. Her writing has appeared in Forbes, CIO, VentureBeat, as well as over 500 author blogs. Stacy is frequently quoted in online publications as well as published books, including several college textbooks. Stacy Miller, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me, Bert. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. All right. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the company. What is it that you guys do?
Absolutely. So Cision is a global media intelligence company. We're based out of Chicago, Illinois. And what we do is we really provide solutions for communicators looking to reach and engage their audiences, whether that be through traditional media, the press, PR outreach, or through this rapidly evolving online medium, so the web and social media, and what we're going to talk about today, which is influencers. So we provide a variety of solutions for people to reach and engage the audiences that are important to them, and so that brands can tell their stories.
Gotcha. All right, so you guys have coined this phrase, real-time influence. What is real-time influence?
Real-time influence is really interesting, and I'm really excited to introduce it today because it's one of those really important PR and marketing tactics that brands can use to stand out amongst the noise. So we live in a really crowded world today. One of my good marketing friends coined the term infobesity. We live in a world where there's so much information out there, so many marketing messages, right? It's hard to pay attention, and it's hard to reach the people who are important to us, aka our buyers, our listeners, our audiences. So what real-time influence does is it harnesses the conversations of people who are influential to your brand, so the friends of friends, trusted third-party advisors who can influence purchasing decisions and get people involved with your brand, and then couples that with the real-time nature of marketing and pouncing on events as they happen and harnessing opportunities that are happening at that moment to be relevant in the right place and at the right time.
Gotcha. Okay. So walk me through this. How does Cinchon put all this together? Because, you know, for example, you're in Chicago, so this is fairly close to you. I mean, it's in the Hudson. So, you know, a few years ago, we had the famous Captain Sullivan who landed this airliner in the Hudson because it had been struck by a bird or whatever. And Twitter blew up. Obviously, you know, mm-hmm. that to me is this real-time influence. So what do you guys do with, as you said, with all this info that's out there, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, how do you guys manage all that? Or what do you guys do different than that?
Well, that's a really unbelievable event that happened, right? So
right.
We have the airline, the brand reputation at stake when something like that happens. We have social media breaking news before the news can even get their trucks out to the Hudson. And there are conversations that are happening behind the brand's back, so to speak, before they can even get to them. So what real-time influences does and what Cinchon really does is help you identify those conversations that are happening on social, online, as they break so that you can respond to them faster than other people can run away with your story. So there's positives and there's negatives to those events, right? So the positive was that, the pilot was a hero. So we want to harness his story and tell his story and how he made his decisions and have the brand talk to the people who were involved in the crisis and share their story, share the positive of it. And then what you also want to do is it's kind of classic crisis PR management, but even more rapidly than before by using social media. So we talk to the people who have a negative experience, see why it was so negative, try to change their perception, and then use people who are speaking positively about the situation to talk to those who have a more negative perception of the situation and then help them feel better about it. So using the people and utilizing and creating relationships with the people who spread our positive brand messages the most can then positively impact those negative conversations that happen.
Yeah, I like that because I think you really showed a great example there, because in a situation like that, you do have so many stories going on simultaneously. You have the reputation of the airline, you have the heroic captain, you have the consumers, you have all these different stories and all these back channels, if you will, that are being backstories that are being created simultaneously. So how do you go about identifying people that are influential to your brand?
Absolutely. This is kind of my favorite part because in traditional marketing and PR, who do we think of as influencers? Well, we thought of them as the media. The media shapes the story of the brand. So if the press was about to write about us, if they put us on a television spot, if they publish a story online, we thought, okay, that's the end-all be-all. But with the advent of the web and with social media, while traditional media such as magazines and televisions and newspapers, all those things are still very relevant, there's a new era of influencer. And it's simply put, the people who are talking about your brand. They could be prospects, they could be customers, they could just be people who are involved in the industry. They're just regular people observing the news and talking about it among their networks. So figuring out which of those groups of people are influencing brand conversations about your brand specifically are very important. So traditionally you would build a media list. You'd say, hey, I want to get in TechCrunch. I want to get in Wall Street Journal. Here are the influential journalists at those targets. Where influencer marketing changes that is that we find the people online who are talking the most, who have the largest networks, and the ones who are influencing other people to take action. And action could be comments, it could be shares, it could be influencing people to visit a website, to check out a new product or service, to read more news. All of this conversation can be influential. So identifying who will make your brand's best allies is what you want to focus on. So you kind of see this today. A lot of retail brands are doing this really well. One of my favorite examples comes from Ford, actually, and I'm sorry, Jeep out of Detroit. So they have a really great real-time influence program where, okay, they have an auto show coming up, and they know that they're going to be releasing a new model. So what they do is they bring people that they know talk about Jeep on social media. So it's not just the, you know, car, the auto and car driver magazine writers. It's, hey, here are the people who are loyal, you know, Jeep owners, and they talk a lot about us on social media, and they're influencing other people to consider buying a Jeep. So they bring them to their conference in real time. They fly them out, and then they give them the Jeep experience. And those influencers go out on social media, and they say, hey, I'm at the Jeep conference. I'm at the press day. Here's all the new features about the Jeeps, and here's what they're introducing. And as they share that with their networks, their influence grows, and it helps Jeep increase their brand awareness with new prospects and potentially new clients. And that's really, really, really powerful. So kind of, you know, my number one tip for identifying your targets and your influencers is to find the up-and-comers who are just starting to gain traction, because it's easier to cultivate relationships with people who have smaller, more niche networks than going after that big pie-in-the-sky, you know, TechCrunch reporter or Car and Driver magazine reporter who has other brands and other companies already vying for their attention.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, so let me ask you, would Cinchon in this case be more enterprise type? Are you looking for, are you guys working with bigger brands, or are you guys able to work with smaller brands, the you know, the startup here and there, the local chain of restaurants, that kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely. So Cision does service brands of all sizes, from small businesses all the way up to enterprise. So we've serviced local restaurant chains, mom and pop shops, and we kind of teach them, you know, here are the PR and the marketing tactics that are going to make a difference for you locally, because for the examples that you provided, the local audience is really important to them. As we get up to enterprise solutions and enterprise brands, they're looking to reach a much wider audience in a variety of verticals, and it becomes much more difficult because, again, there's so much noise, there's so many more companies competing for their attention. So we help educate brands on everything from, you know, press release writing and distribution, content creating, social media monitoring and analytics, how to find the influencers online, how to engage with them online and create these programs, and then how to track and measure those programs and to show, okay, here's how social media is contributing to business results. We helped engage with 20 influencers this year on social, and as a result of those 20 influencers, you know, they brought us in a network of 100 people who ended up buying our products. That's really, really powerful in marketing and PR.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, speaking of influence, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Gary was asking me, Bert, what does that have to do with influence? Well, it influences our pocketbook. That's how, sometimes my segues aren't the best. Anyway, today we're discussing influence marketing. Who are the big influencers in your brand or in your market, your audience? How do you track with them? How do you build rapport with them? We're Stacy Miller. She is the Senior Manager of Communications at Cinchon. And Cinchon is the software platform that allows you to do this. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's say you've identified some people. Now, how do you go about building rapport with these influencers?
Absolutely. So influencer marketing, I like to think of it as really closely tied to, you know, traditional PR and public relations. It's not about going out and asking someone to cover your brand or place them on their website or anything like that. It's about building relationships and nurturing them. So you want to, we talked about identifying who your influencers are, just the way as you would identify your traditional media targets. It's really about keeping in touch and having this one-to-one connection. It's amazingly simple because, you know, in 2016, all we hear about are new tools about how to do our marketing and our PR and how to do marketing automation and this and that. But what is really at the core of influencer marketing is one-to-one relationships. So to build rapport, I would say to keep in touch by adding really thoughtful insights and just conversing with them one-on-one. So share their work, provide data and story opportunities, and actually take a genuine interest in what they are doing. So when someone writes something that's related to your brand or to your industry, write back to them and write something that's thoughtful, not some canned answer. Share the things that they're sharing that align with your brand goals and show them that you have this connection. Something that's really, really valuable to people, especially social media users and advocates of a brand, are when someone engages, write back with them because it makes them feel like they're a part of that brand, they're a part of that family. And then the brand no longer becomes a logo. The brand almost feels like a friend and they're ingrained into that culture. So create that emotional connection, stay on their radar, by remaining top of mind and talking to them as often as you can. You can create a program where you talk to them daily or weekly or monthly. So that way, when you're ready to involve them in an influencer relations program and ask them to advocate for your brand because you know that they've been actively involved, it's easier for them to say yes and easier for them to make an impact.
Yeah, and I think the key here, and I want to emphasize this, is the relationship, because it is really all about the relationship. If you and I have a relationship and, you know, let's say that we're talking, you know, fine upscale crystal, and because you and I have a relationship, I can come to you and say, hey, check this out. What do you think about this? Or, you know, because we have this relationship. If we don't have a relationship, then it's that awkward thing where I'm kind of imposing myself on you. And so the key thing is to have these relationships. I like what you said there, where you have a program maybe where you talk to them, if not every day, every other day or once a week. And as any good relationship, give back, right, by commenting on what they're talking about. Help them, because that's what, you know, the relationship's all about, give and take.
Absolutely.
All right, so Ascension's been around how long? Over 10 years?
Over 10 years, just about now.
All right, if you guys want to find out more about Ascension, you can go to Ascension. It's CISION.com. And I believe that you guys have a report there, too, that 6 steps to harnessing real-time influence. You guys can go and check it out, get the free report, see if it's something that you guys can use to expand your influence and your brand. Stacey Miller, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
Thank you so much. Hope it was helpful.
You bet. All right, good stuff there. And again, I'm intrigued by this real-time influence, and you guys should go check out the good people at Ascension and see what they can do for your brand. And I get no remuneration. I just like the platform, and it might be something that, you guys can use. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Let's see. So we're going to be talking about sales and marketing here for a little bit. Why? Because sales and marketing is the heart of everybody's business. And so there's multiple parts to sales and marketing. The number one thing, and I think Stacy Miller talked about this in the previous segment, you have to identify who your audience is. A lot of people don't really know who their audience really, truly is. Here's who your audience is not. Your audience is not everybody. Not everybody can be marketed to. So whether you're selling, you know, pizza pies or apple pies, you have a specific audience. And you know, a good example of speaking of pizza is, you know, you have Domino's and Papa John's. On the surface, they're going after the same market. But when you look a little bit deeper, they're going after a slightly different market. So same market, people who love pizza, but Papa John's, what is their tagline, their USP? Better ingredients, better pizza. And the Domino's, to be honest with you, I can't remember what their tagline is because I know they just went through a brand upgrade. So they're going after different people in the same market. Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, very similar. But, man, you got people who love Coke. You have people who love Pepsi. And so who is your audience? Who's your ideal audience? Man, if you're a consultant, if you are a freelance engineer, if you are a professional in the legal field or maybe you're an accounting field, you need to really, truly identify who you want to work with. Do you want to work with small companies or big companies? Right? Do you want to work with local companies or do you want to go national? So identify who your audience is. That is your first goal. And the more you know about your audience, the easier it is for you to find them. And believe it or not, to repel those who are not your audience. For example, if you want to work with companies that are $2 million and above, and the person who is maybe engaged with you at a networking function is a startup company, well, you probably don't want to take them on as a client. It's just too different, right? You know that that startup company is going to need different help than the $2 million company who's your ideal client. So that's an example of, you know, of the whole audience thing. And then second of all, you really need to create a funnel, a marketing funnel. So how are you going to get your clients from being prospects to being customers? Think about that. What are you going to do? So a lot of, you know, it's not just advertising. And advertising is the key. It's the beginning. But what else do you need to do? You also need to, create a step because, look, if you see my ad for the first time, you're not going to drop everything and run out there and, start buying my stuff. A small percentage of people will, but not a lot, right? So the first step is, so now that you know who your audience is, you're marketing to them, and then you have to offer them something of value. Think about it. When you go to the mall and you're in the food court, there's somebody standing around. They're going to give you a free sample of their food. That is something that is valuable. Somebody can sample the food and say, wow, I like this. I'm going to go further, right? I mean, have you ever done that? And so it works all the time. So you maybe send them to a video page, and the video page says, hey, this is who we are. This is how we can help you. Here are the benefits. This is the solution. If you're having this solution, I mean, if you're having these problems, here are the solutions that we offer. By the way, why don't you sign up for our free webinar and we'll teach you a bunch of stuff. Or why don't you grab our six-step report? And so you want them to sign up. You want to build that email list because now you can market to them continually, which is one of the other steps. You have to market to them continually, right? So you're able to market to them. And the way marketing works or advertising works is that somebody must hear or see your message at least 7 times before they recognize it. Here's something that you might find incredible. If people sign up for an email list, right, to get a free report or a newsletter or something, and then that email list doesn't contact them for a week, most of them, a large percentage, like 70%, have forgotten why they signed up, and now they think they're getting spammed. So if they don't get a message for you for like 2 or 3 weeks, they will absolutely not know who you are. So how do you send them a message without sounding all salesy? It's all value-driven, value-driven, value-driven. You got to give them something of value time and time and time again. And that's really what it takes. So you identified your audience. You are now marketing to them. You are sending them to a landing page or a splash page where they can sign up for a free webinar or get a free report. And now they're in your funnel. Now you're going to start sending them valuable information on a weekly basis. And maybe even for the first couple of days, send them something. Hey, thanks for signing up. Here's your video. Here's your report. The next day, hey, do you have any questions about the information we just sent you? Maybe the third day. By the way, in case you wanted to, you can contact us here and here's our free webinar, or maybe sign up for a one-on-one session. Don't be afraid, because this is the hottest that they're going to be, right? So strike while the iron's hot. So really quickly, ask them to sign up for maybe a phone call, if that's what you offer, or a free demo. And it doesn't have to be in 3 days. You can make that offer the first time after they sign up, as well as the second day. And then maybe you wait a week and you send them something else valuable, but do it on a regular, consistent basis. And that is your marketing funnel. Realizing that something like 90% of the individuals that sign up for your marketing will not act right away. We're talking sometimes they take a year after seeing your ads and building a relationship before they act. So those are the multiple steps, and those are general steps. If you have questions, reach out to me, Bert@BertMartinez.com, or you can hit me up on Facebook or Twitter, and be glad to give you some free tips and send you on your way. We're going to take a free commercial break. A free commercial break. How about that? A commercial break. And then we'll be back right after this.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew. Poor
thing.
Sounds awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
All right, so I was talking earlier about leaving this afternoon. We're heading out to CinemaCon. J.J. Abrams was there. I think he might have left. Too bad. I wanted to meet with J.J. Abrams, and I think that would have been fun. Don't know if I would have been allowed, but it would have been at least fun to attempt. So anyway, good stuff there from CinemaCon. And so Simon Pegg, if you're not familiar with Simon Pegg, he played Scotty on the latest rendition of Star Trek, which is the last couple of them been J.J. Abrams movies. He also forgot what his name was, but he was in Star Wars. He was... the guy who is the giving out the portions of food for whatever junk they bring him. He's the junk dealer. And so Anyway, so looking forward to meet him. Megan Fox, hubba hubba, I'd love to meet her. But you know what? I don't go down there just to meet celebrities. I really don't. Great to meet celebrities, but I really go down there to build relationships with producers, directors, and celebrities. Why not? Because it's all about relationships. Stacey Miller talked about this earlier. Look, it's all 100% about relationships. How do you get people to become brand advocates? How do you get them to volunteer for your association or your committee or your objective? It's all through that relationship. The power relationship has not been displaced, and I don't think it will ever be displaced by technology. Some things can be done better by technology or faster by technology, but the relationship is still the core of marketing and selling or building a brand. Why? Because it's all about the story we tell. And the story is what engages and starts to build a relationship. So it's, you know, so keep that in mind, you know, that everything that we do comes down to that story. All right. I'm going to run real quick and I'll be right back. Bear with me.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, guys, we are back. My next guest, Kathy Fetke, CEO and founder of Real Wealth Network, based in Walnut Creek, California, an organization dedicated to helping members get the most current and cutting-edge education and information they need to succeed as real estate investors. Kathy is a licensed realtor, former mortgage broker, and an active real estate investor. She was selected as one of America's number one most intriguing entrepreneurs by Goldman Sachs at the first annual and now second annual Builders and Innovators Summit. Kathy Fetke is an active real estate investor, licensed realtor, certified coach, and former mortgage broker. Kathy Fetke, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about this because this is kind of a big deal. Chinese investors are pulling back from investing in America or investing in American real estate or everything. Tell us about this.
Well, it is, you know, definitely real estate is my main focus, and Chinese investors have been buying up a lot of U.S. real estate for years. They couldn't find the yields or returns in their own country, and, of course, it's a huge real estate bubble there. So I think they recognize it's time to get out before that market crashes. And because they had so much money, they're kind of driving our prices up here. But that's starting to pull back because they're seeing some of the areas where they've been investing as now are in a bubble here in the U.S. So it's a little bit like what California does to other areas when, you know, we have a bubble and then we go to Portland or, you know, Oregon or Florida or anywhere else, Nevada, and drive prices up there until they also have a bubble. That's kind of what's happening.
Yeah, no, I love that. All right. So focusing on real estate, how will this affect our real estate? What does it mean to homeowners or investors?
Well, it is something to pay attention to, mainly in the cities where the Chinese have been buying aggressively, because there is a very good chance that that prices were driven up because of that money. And with that money pulling out, there could be at least stabilization of prices or even possibly price declines in certain markets. So it's just really something to pay attention to. And where, you know, we're located in California. Our office is in, our Real Wealth Network office is in Walnut Creek outside of San Francisco, and then we are also in LA. And those two markets have really been very popular for Chinese investors. And also, these two areas are what Realtor.com calls the hottest markets in America, meaning there's just prices have gone up so much, and there's been so much demand, but affordability is completely out of whack. So I think those two areas are going to are in trouble, really, if more Chinese money pulls out.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this. When you're seeing this kind of wackiness, right? I mean, when the values are have been going up, and now, of course, as you mentioned, we have these the Chinese that are pulling out. What happens? I mean, are we talking about another real estate bubble collapse? What do you see happening?
Yes, I think just in areas where numbers don't make sense anymore, there will be ramifications. You know, an area can't be out of affordability for very long. Every market cycle is about every 10 years. And for some reason, people forget that. But it doesn't feel like it was 10 years ago in 2006 when the mortgage meltdown happened and suddenly we had an incredible housing crisis and foreclosure crisis. It really doesn't feel that long ago. So it's a little bit shocking that people forgot.
Sure.
You know? But they do it every decade. And it's always fueled by some kind of stimulus. That's not natural, you know. So obviously in the mid 2000s, it was bad loans. It was just these liar loans that, you know, anyone could get a loan. I was a mortgage broker at the time, and I literally could have. I didn't, but I could have given a homeless person a loan. A lot of mortgage brokers did, because the banks just, you know, it was stated income loans, and you just needed a name and a social security number. That was kind of it. And so that it makes sense that prices would drive prices up, and there was obviously a lot of mortgage fraud because mortgage brokers who did that could make $10,000-$20,000, you know, from a liar loan. So
sure.
That makes sense. So a lot of people look at this time around and say, well, we don't have that. We have tough loans. We have banks that are very strict and they're full doc loans and. And so they don't see the problem, but it's a different kind of stimulus today. The different stimulus is low interest rates and then foreign money coming in and then an inflated stock market and quantitative easing. So the stimulus has just come in a different form, and it's driven up bubbles in the stock market and real estate, not all real estate, but in certain markets. And, yeah, there is going to be, I think, pretty severe crash in the bubble markets, because bubbles never have a soft landing. They pop. And that's just what they do.
They boom, they explode. Well, you know what? And yeah. First of all, let's talk about this, because it's so funny how we as a people forget about these cyclical times, because it is, you know, it may happen every 8 or 10 or 12 years, but it does happen. And I think the difference is, you know, being – patient enough to, you know, wait for them, if you will. I mean, I think that coming up, and I want to get your take on this as a real estate investor, I think over the next couple of years we're going to see some decline in prices. And as an investor, might be a good time to get into the market and snatch up some good deals. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
You think we're going to turn around and see some decline in prices and maybe gobble up some good deals?
Yeah, I do think that's the case. I mean, there's still parts of the country that have not recovered from the last downturn. So there's still fantastic buying opportunities out there. There's great cash flow properties. There's emerging markets where big, you know, companies are moving to, and industrial parks like Reno, Nevada, where Tesla just moved its headquarters. And, you know, there's areas where there's still fantastic opportunity today to invest in real estate. But like every market, it's they all cycle at different speeds. So back in 2006, California was way overinflated, and we were at Real Wealth Network. I was warning people, sell, sell, sell. It is none of this makes sense. You have to use your full, you know, all of your paycheck goes to your housing. That's not sustainable. And so we were, you know, very, very aggressively telling people, sell, 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 California, it's at the peak. And buy, and you can exchange, if it's investment property, you can exchange it tax-deferred. You don't have to pay that gain at that time. So, you know, we're saying sell your investment property in California or any property and exchange it tax-deferred for properties in Texas, because in 2006, Texas was not in a bubble, not even close. It was 26% undervalued. It was like whatever the opposite of a bubble is. It was the opposite. And so, you know, here in 2006, people had the opportunity to sell at the peak in a bubble market and exchange those properties for the opposite. So they got to ride that wave all the way up in Dallas, which is now in a bubble 10 years later. So it's the same thing today. People can sell the bubble markets and get in right now into markets that are just poised for growth. But I agree with you that once those bubble markets pop, it will be an opportunity to buy in places like California and New York.
Absolutely. And you know what? Here's the other thing that I want to get your opinion on. I think that what I have seen, and this is stuff that I have done as well, that's why I've seen it, is that you become, as an investor, you become impatient, right? And especially in real estate. Real estate is a patience game. If you're in a hurry to make money, real estate's not it for you. If I think, to me, real estate should be part of everybody's portfolio, number one. But it's really a patient game. You know, you invest, and I think that you can invest for different things, such as cash flow properties, and that takes a little bit more skill than just buying and flipping and things of that nature. And you have to look at what you want to do. And I think that if you have the patience for it and sit down and try to, you know, understand what you do, then you can be good at it. And the other thing, you know, you're a coach, so I'm a big believer in getting help. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you know, when it was time to ride a bike, we got a coach, probably our siblings or our parents. When it was time to learn how to drive a car, we got a coach. Again, it might have been a sibling or a parent or a driving class. But I've met so many people that are going to, quote, wing it into something they've never done. And it, to me, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you lose money. You know, it's people think that real estate's easy, and it might be for some people, but most people lose money on their first deals. And that's unfortunate, because you don't have to. You know, if you get a mentor, I mean, in anything, I wouldn't go jumping into the stock market and shorts. You know, I might have seen The Big Short, but I'm not going to go run and try to short something. You know, I don't know it. I don't understand it. I would need someone to help me who's done that before and done it successfully. So I don't care what it is. You know, you shouldn't jump in the deep end of anything if you don't know how to swim. And so, yes, I agree. But I do believe you can make money overnight in real estate. But again, you have to know what you're doing. If you can find a distressed property and you know how to fix it up, first of all, you know it's distressed, you know it's undervalued, and you know how to fix it up, and you can make money in a month, you know, or even in a few. I mean, we just did a project. Literally, we're closing this week, where we bought some land in Reno, where there's just a desperate need for housing there. We got a hold of some land from a distressed seller that took a hard money loan, and they have to pay it off or they're going to lose the property. So we tied it up, and we're able to sell or wholesale, basically flip, half of the lots, more than half, like three quarters of the lots to builders. And we're flipping it at such a high price that we're getting the 88 remaining lots free and clear.
No.
So, you know, that's – yeah. Yeah.
But,
I mean, so there's ways, but you don't just go out and do that on your own without – I'm doing that with someone who has 40 years experience doing that.
Well, and so here's what I want to point out. You can't – you know, it's just like you said, can you do something like that overnight? Yes, you can. But as you pointed out, it takes knowledge. It takes expertise. You're partnering up with somebody who's been doing it for 40 years. And on top of that, it's not typically what a beginner starts off with. This is somebody who knows what they're doing and has a little experience. And and because of your experience, you can say, hey, you know what? Here's an opportunity.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's what I love about what I do at Real Wealth Network is we, you know, the average person doesn't have 40 years developing land or buying land or even knowing what to do with land. Land can be probably the most dangerous investment you buy, but people sometimes, like you said, just buy it thinking they got a great deal, and then they don't know what to do with it and sometimes can't do anything because the city planners won't let you. But in this case at Real Wealth Network, we partner with developers who have done it successfully over and over again. So even a brand new investor can come in on a deal like that one in Reno, helping to fund it. We had to raise $7 million in like 2 weeks, and we did because it's such a good deal, and people get to participate, and I bring the developer in to the room and have him explain everything. So people are learning from him and you know, feeling like they're getting mentored, even though not one of us would actually go out and do that ourselves because we don't have those 40 years experience. But we still get to kind of, ride on his wings, so to speak, and learn from him. So it's fun. I like that. But in general, I think what you're saying is the buy and hold concept that when you buy income property, you got to be patient and just invest for cash flow and enjoy that cash flow and know that there are more conservative ways to invest that actually in the long run will be the way that you replace your income through that cash flow.
Absolutely. Kathy Fetke, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about real estate and about the China bubble that's happening, and have you back soon.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there from Kathy Fetke. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You
want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Jane Tabachnik. Jane Tabachnik is a best-selling author in book publishing and buzz-building coach. She helps savvy entrepreneurs and enlightened professionals get more visibility and authority, positioning, and become published best-selling authors. Jane has been named one of top 100 people online by Fast Company and is the recipient of the Galaxy Award. For more information, you can visit her website, simplygoodpress.com. Jane Tabachnik, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, let's talk about this. I've heard this so many times, but I want you to tell our audience about the book. The book as the new business card, so to speak.
Sure. So what you may hear from people is that writing a book is on their bucket list. And one of the reasons is that most people feel they have a story. But in addition to that, from a business point of view, a book can do these five great things for you. It can help establish your expertise. It can set you apart because there may be many experts in your industry or niche, but how many of them have written a book? So it can definitely set you apart. And because of that, it can open doors, it can certainly attract and bring in new business, and it's a great marketing tool. Imagine you're at an event and everyone's handing out a business card and you're handing out a copy of your book. It's fun.
Absolutely. Right there, the minute you hand somebody your book, you know they're going to go, wow, this is cool. Thank you so much. You know, and it's just, it's a complete pattern interrupt because they're used to getting these cards that they're not going to even look at.
Exactly. And you know, the funny thing about a book, they may not even read it, but no one throws away a book. So business cards, they may, after a while, say, you know, I'm not doing anything with these in the circular file. But with a book, they're going to hold on to it. And so it's a continual reminder of you.
I like that. Absolutely correct. We have been trained as a society that books are valuable. And this is something that is really ingrained in our society for hundreds of years. Because if you look at the history of books, not everybody was fortunate enough to even buy a book. It was, you know, it took years, literally hundreds of years before books was like a common thing.
That's true.
All right.
And
so
even though people read, no,
go
sorry,
ahead.
I was just going to say, even though people read books digitally, there's still something about holding a book. There's still something great about a print book.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. You mentioned that it's on everybody's bucket list, and I agree with that. But the thing that stops most people from writing a book, I would think, is they find it very difficult, right? They're probably, they probably can spit out a chapter or maybe two, and then it kind of fizzles out. So how do you step in and help them get it done?
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, even professional authors will tell you that writing a book is a big undertaking, and some of them will even describe it as a painful process. And these are people who choose to be writers for a living and who are very successful. So it's definitely a big commitment. So I think the first thing to do is decide what kind of book you want to create and then figure out the best way to get it done based on knowing yourself, knowing your resources both in time and budget. So there are a couple of ways that you can get your book done. You can write it yourself. You can set yourself a schedule, maybe write one chapter a week until you get it done, if that's doable, one chapter a month, what have you. You can certainly hire a ghostwriter. You can hire a book coach to help you through the process, keep you accountable, give you feedback. Or you can use a hybrid. And I use a hybrid type format where we actually use an interview format. So we create or design a strategic set of questions based on what our author's expertise and their goals are, and then we interview them. So we extract their genius in their own words, and then we have it transcribed into text, and that forms the basis for the book. So it basically does the heavy lifting for them. So they're not writing it, but yet the book comes out in their own words.
I like that. And, you know, the other thing I like about that is that there's a little accountability there, right?
Yes.
They're going to do this interview, and first, the accountability, this is what I love about this. First, the accountability is on them. They have to come to the interview. They have to be prepared. They got to be able to, you know, spit out this information. Then, this is the nice part, then, of course, you're going to transcribe it and clean it all up. So now, you know, it's much easier to hold somebody else accountable. So now your clients are calling you saying, hey, Jane, where's my book at? You know, what's the process? What's the next step? This is why having a system or a coach to help you do this stuff is so beneficial, because otherwise you can get lost trying to do a chapter a week. Again, if you have the discipline, go for it. But I can tell you, you know, as you were mentioning about how difficult it is, even for professional writers, my dear friend, Joe Vitale, Dr. Joe Vitale, who's written like 60 plus books, and he was a starving author up until he was like, he had written three or four or five books by then. None of them had made any money. And he didn't know how to leverage the book. And so I think it was his fifth or sixth book that finally was a best-selling. I mean, when I say bestseller, like over-the-top bestseller, where actually paid him some huge dividends and changed his life. So it is very difficult, both on the writing end, but also on the leveraging end, because, you know, I think that if he would have had somebody like yourself, he would have probably done better with it if he would have had a coach to say, listen, this is how you market your book. This is how, here are the three or four ways you can use your book other than just selling it for $20 or $30.
Exactly. And his story is phenomenal. I know his story very well. So, and unfortunately for, you know, a number of writers, it's, they publish their book and then they hear crickets. They work so hard on their book, and it makes me sad that happens, you know. And unfortunately, some of the work begins when the book is done, which is can be a shock to some authors, especially if they're with a publishing house. Nowadays, publishing houses, especially with first-time authors, will leave it to the author really to publicize and promote the book. So the writing is the beginning, and then the next part is really finding your audience and getting in front of them.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you, again, New York Times bestselling author Patrick Snow, a good friend of mine. The reason his book became a bestselling author had nothing to do with his publishing house. It all had to do with him. He was in the trenches marketing the crud out of his book, and he finally, I forgot the company that ended up buying like, you know, a gazillion copies that made him a New York Times bestseller. But, you know, but for that company buying 10,000 copies or 20,000 copies, he wouldn't have made that mark. And so it is, like you said, once a book is completed, that's when the work really begins. Like a lot of things in life, right? Once you have the baby, that's when the work really begins. Once you open your business, that's when the work really begins. So like a lot of things in life. All right, let's talk about this real quick. When, you know, as you mentioned, writing the book is only the first part. Marketing and promoting the book is this necessary ticket that necessary step that people constantly miss. Talk about that. So how do I leverage the book other than trying to sell it for 10 or 20 bucks or whatever it is? What are some other ways that I can use to market and leverage my book?
Sure. So in terms of marketing and leveraging your book, well, there are two sides to it. So the strategy of it is really having a plan and starting before your book is done. So I've actually done interviews and been on podcasts and radio shows and interviewed for articles before my book has been finished. So people will start to help promote you and interview you before the book is done. So that's a good thing to know that some people might not realize. But you really want to have a plan, a very simple plan even, but start planning and putting what I call your media assets in place before your book is done. So an author one sheet, or it can be called a media kit, is a great thing to have. People will want to see that. Putting together a page or a small website about your book, little press kit, those are things you want to just have ready to go. So you feel confident that you have the tools in place. If someone says, great, I'd like to know more about it, can you send me your press kit? You're prepared. But the other side to what I think you may have been asking is that there are a number of ways that entrepreneurs, professionals, and authors can benefit from a book in terms of return on investment, both financial and otherwise. So book sales are something that can often be the least financially rewarding part of a book, unless it's a runaway bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list and you get a movie deal, et cetera. The great things that can happen from your book is that you can become recognized as an expert, or your status can be elevated. And what happens with that is that you start to attract opportunities. People may invite you to speak. They may invite you to be on an advisory board or a corporate board. They may want to partner with you. You start attracting clients. And the great thing about this, which is sometimes a real surprise, is because they see you as this expert, they expect to pay more to work with you. So they're no longer starting to question or try and negotiate your price. You're a recognized expert. You're seen as the best in your field. And they're pre-sold on working with you just by virtue of having seen that you're a published author or read your book. So there are so many great things that can happen just by publishing your book. And with a nice strategy, even a simple one, you can cultivate the particular aspects or return on investment that you're looking for.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I hope everybody heard that or understood that. Bottom line is the book is just the entry fee. And now you can take that book, you can market it to your association. And when I say market, I don't mean try to sell it. I'm talking about what Jane is talking about, and that is, you know, be a speaker at an association. Use it to separate yourself from the competition and increase your visibility. There's so many things you can do with it. Jane, unfortunately, we're out of time. What I'd love to do is bring you back and talk more about the ROI of the book. Jane Tabachnik, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. We'll have you back soon.
Thanks so much, Bert. Have a great day.
All righty. Good stuff there. Guys, great to have you here. As always, keep the show suggestions and the ideas coming. Reach out to me on Facebook and Twitter. And most of all, remember, you were created to succeed.
tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website.